The Capital Golf Gang is brought to you by Golfdom, and the 2024 golf season has arrived. You need to get to Golfdom at any of their locations in Tysons, Annapolis, or Rockville and see the latest in clubs, apparel, shoes, and all the golf gear you'll ever need. Get fit for the latest club offerings at any of their locations and let the Golfdom fitters get you dialed in. While you're there, be sure to take a walk through their fabulous selection of apparel that will have you looking great on and off the course. Golfdom also offers full-service club repair to get your existing clubs ready, so get your clubs re-gripped. Check those lofts and lies, or upgrade that driver shaft. Golfdom has been in the D.C. market since 1982, but they've grown to three locations as part of the Worldwide Golf family. You can shop online at worldwidegolf.com or visit Golfdom in Tysons, Virginia, or in Annapolis or Rockville, Maryland. Golfdom, live the game. I love it. We're in store for the first time all year. Say hello to the gang. John Ronis, Director of Golf at River Creek. Golf clap, please, everybody.
Thank you, Johnny.
Thank you. Johnny Gould, who is the Executive Director of the Mid-Atlantic PGA. Golf clap for Mr. Gould right there.
Good to be here.
And say hello to Christopher Johnson, a.k.a. Siege, from the Salute Military Golf Association. Good
CJ,
to see
welcome.
You. Very exciting news, CJ, since you're not one of our regulars. Buddy, in his very generous way, has said every guest who appears on the Capital Golf Gang, not part of the regulars, will receive a dozen TaylorMade TP5 golf balls in your flavor.
Ooh.
The
nice.
Original or TP5X? This one's crooked. This one's slightly less crooked. Which one would you like?
I'm going to go with the X. It's a beautiful
thing. Okay. The X is yours. Hands team. There it is.
TaylorMade, also a longtime supporter of SMGA. Longtime
partner how about that?
Of SMGA.
That,
nice.
That is right.
Everything works together.
It's a synergy. Yes.
And John, we will receive total consciousness.
On your deathbed.
Yeah.
So you got that for you, which is nice. Yeah.
Nice.
I was about to say, CJ. Don't tell the guys. Yeah, they don't get anything, okay?
We're used to it.
Although, do you really need golf balls?
No. No, we that don't.
Okay.
Neither of us.
That's what I figured. All right. Good to be here. A lot going on, to say the least, in the world of golf. So let's get cracking right to it. Hole number one. Holy Scheffler.
Amazing.
Back-to-back Players' Championships. Back-to-back at Bay Hill and Sawgrass. And he did it this week with a bad neck. Scotty with a good neck, number one strokes gained, tee to green, nobody's close. Scotty with a bad neck that can't really move right, number two strokes gained.
Decent.
Decent.
And he figured out a putt.
Although he only gained, I think, a half a stroke, I believe, on the field when it was all said and done. If he ever gets to the plus one, plus two, good night now. And, of course, Wyndham Clark had a chance at the end. What a scene. A few guys had chances, but what a putt. Have you ever seen a putt lip out quite that bad to either get in a playoff or win a tournament?
It's pretty rare. I can't remember a person and a place that it happened that, but I'll remember that one.
Oh,
they will.
As will Wyndham Clark. Now, by the way, they both went back-to-back, the two of them. 1-2, 1-2, back-to-back weeks.
Right. Yeah. First time it happened in since, 1960 or something like that with Arnold Palmer and somebody else did that. Our friend Justin Ray on Twitter came up with that great stat. I would say anytime you're talking about with Scheffler, they keep saying this is the first time this has happened since. It's either since Tiger Woods or first time ever for the back-to-back Players' Championships or the first time, back-to-back into the Players' Championship in terms of the API. Anytime you start saying since and you include guys like Arnold Palmer and Tiger Woods, you're up there.
Yeah.
No
CJ.
Yeah, I mean, the Wyndham Clark lip out is one of the best slow-mo highlights I've ever seen.
Yeah.
I mean,
and the still shot.
It gets worse and worse of how deep the ball is in the cup there.
That was so
and
bad.
When we go back and look at the full reel of the highlights of the PGA Tour season, that's going to be at the top of it right there. And, yep. it was a missed putt. Scheffler, I got to imagine if any of those players are the ones that look up at scoreboards, that when you see him hunting you down, it's bad news.
Yeah, it really
is.
It's
Discovery Channel, Tiger in the Woods. I mean, Lion in the Woods kind of bad news. For him to come back from that far down with the neck injury and just, you know, pounding green after green after green that the last day on.
And he missed a couple short putts too, like 13 where he hit it close. And
like you said, on back-to-back two hard golf courses like that for him to dominate, incredible.
I'm trying to get still a read on Scheffler, and I think I had fallen into the whole simple, God-fearing family man, just loves golf. He's got some dog in him.
He's a quiet assassin.
He is.
You can't win.
Stone cold winner. He's got some Ricky Bobby in him.
And you can't win as many junior tournaments. And they finally mentioned it on the post game or something that his college career was a letdown because he came into college.
Where did he play in college?
I don't really know.
That's how bad it is.
One of the Texas schools.
He played at Texas.
Yeah. Okay, he played at Texas.
They said it was a bit of a letdown because he came in there. Basically, I think he won over 100 junior tournaments, and he was just winning everything.
Yeah.
And you can't do that unless, one, you love the game, and two, you want to beat everyone every single time out.
Right.
You're not just being a nice guy. Ricky Fowler falls into that category of doesn't seem to have the killer in him. He's just that nice, it seems, of a human being.
Right.
Scheffler, I think, wants to beat you and rip you up and then pick you back up and put you back together again. But first, he wants to devour you.
Yes, absolutely.
And one of the things that we've talked about on this show before is that he just seems so boring. And part of it is, A, because he's just so good at everything, maybe except putting for a while that we've talked about. And I've actually read some articles on him. And they're what his friends are saying. Say, you guys, it's kind of like the Belichick thing where he's got a public persona that is boring on purpose. And
right.
then outside of that, it's completely different.
The other tour guys were saying there's a lot more to him than you know.
Right.
I think someone's just got to get a hold of his damn shirt scripting. That's the boringest thing. White, CJ. He wears plain white on the weekends. Well, should be outlawed.
That should be. I also think
a white shirt, Rhodes. Yes.
There's a lot of shirts.
You don't even sell white shirts in the shop.
Because he can, though. Because, you know, he's got a 32-inch waist. You and I can't be wearing white shirts on Sunday.
I just think the other thing, you know, talking about how boring it is, the shot that you have up on the set right here, you don't get to see that kind of emotion. I think that was from 18 when he missed the putt on Sunday.
Flipped his putter, gave the, oh, man, face.
But you rarely see any kind of emotion like that from him. And I think, you know, that's where it just is flatlined, you know, there. And, you know, when the tour loses a player like Jon Rahm, he's not a he's a super fiery player. He'll throw a club. He'll yell at a cameraman. He'll yell at a fan. He'll curse himself out. You don't see any of that kind of stuff from Scottie Scheffler. And I think that hurts when you're trying to gain an audience.
But it helps his game.
Rahm was. Remember, he sought professional help
and to calm down.
And when he did, he became number one or two in the world.
Well, didn't we on this show play the audio of him arguing with his caddy at number 11 right here at Sawgrass about 4 years ago?
Yep.
And he was like, I want to go for it. He was in the bunker, CJ, left.
Yeah.
He tried to hit this 220-yard sweeping hook around the overhanging trees. Went right in the water.
Yeah. As it most of the time does. But he recognized that as his biggest distraction, and he went seeking help for it, and it helped him a lot. I think there's a degree of having to stay very even keel in golf. And I think it's hard because it does get exciting at times and it does get low at times. And I think Scheffler's figured out how to do it.
Now, have you not seemed to notice, at least I feel this way, that his footwork is getting even crazier?
I think it is.
Even more out of sorts. And have you seen this meme that's going around?
It's great. It's great.
The new PGA Tour logo, instead of the guy in perfect balance, it's Scheffler's finish with his feet all over the place.
I think this week,
is that going to be a problem?
No.
Mr. Professional.
No, it's actually freeing because he's not planted in the ground. So it's actually a freeing move. I mean,
there's
probably some timing involved in it, but he did have more of it. It was a little bit more obvious for two reasons this week. One, because of neck, there was a little compensation.
Right.
And two, because some of the rough was so thick that you had to just hit like a maniac.
Well, Wyndham Clark had one where he finished like on one foot leaning forward. So, that was definitely the case. I'm liking Scheffler more and more. Everyone loves a winner, obviously. He's got a long way to go, though, to reach Tiger status because, you know, the joke is, okay, only – what was the
11,
line?
11 more years.
11 more years of being number one in the world to reach that. But also he's not even yet at the strokes gained all-around margin that Tiger is.
Right.
He's a full point behind. So if you take Tiger's peak years, whatever they were, as a 5-7-year stretch, and you take a strokes gain, the whole thing, it was like 3.49 or something. And Scheffler's in the 2.5 range. And then you start going incrementally
but
back.
But he's still
from there.
Second. I mean, that's what's amazing.
He's still second, but he's Secretariat Tiger is still way out ahead of him.
Here's the big thing that struck me that I was wondering about. He rarely wins after April. He doesn't win as much after April.
Has he not been in contention?
I'm trying to think. U.S. Opens and the Augusta, obviously. But after that, he hasn't done a whole lot after April. And I wonder why, if he starts to get into his head a little bit more.
I'd have to look at his results, but I think a lot of that was just putting last year.
It could be. It could be.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm liking him more and more. Now, Wyndham Clark. Let's talk about him for a second. So he wins the U.S. Open last year at LACC. Great story. Got his life together. Tremendous talent. Okay, fine. Like anyone, Siege, when it comes to golfers, I always say to myself, do I need to know and figure out what I think about this guy, or is he just going to drift off and disappear? Because I'm not going to spend any energy knowing, like, what do I think about Wyndham Clark? Now he's up there all the time, and I'm like, okay, I need to start forming an opinion about him. I think I like him. I think I'm not wild about some of his rules interpretations.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, I think for those of you who watched Full Swing, I think you'd appreciate him even more.
And I've got to get to that. So yeah, that's my bad.
His episode, one that's dedicated right to him, is one that you'll learn everything about him. A guy who, like you said, was pretty much a nobody on the tour.
What is his story in a nutshell for those who have not seen it?
Confidence, big anxiety, confidence issue. Ends up getting paired up, matched up with a sports therapist who's a woman, older woman. And they just connected, hit it off.
And he lost his mom, right? He lost his mom to cancer,
right.
And so this is having an older woman in his life that helps, I think, is part of the issue, too.
It's literally, in many events, travels with him. He, you know, really leans on her. They talk about things on and off the golf course. And immediately, you saw a switch in his game. A switch flipped on. And, you know, before he won at LACC, he won at Quail Hollow, another tough golf course.
Right.
In an elevated event last year. And so, just seeing this ascend of his game. And that's essentially the story of it. Just, you know, he's a big emotion guy before that.
Yeah.
Like we were talking about.
I seem to like the cut of his jib, boys. I don't know about you guys. Confident, but respectful and not too cocky. He seems to be respectful of his fellow pros. Seems to be.
Yeah, and I think he's uber competitive. And to what CJ just said, one of the things the sport therapist or psychologist, whatever it is, was helping him with is his negative reaction, kind of what we were talking about with Rom, his negative reaction to bad shots or bad results was affecting him on the golf course. And that's one of the things they spent the special on coaching him through kind of a different way to handle those kind of situations.
Right.
And, you know, they start what we see is the week of the LACC Open, and he wins the darn thing. So you got to figure, you know, that helped.
Well, it's great that they're both there now as emerging stars that the tour can then hang their hat on. More on that in a second. Ronis, your thoughts on
I have a little inside information.
Because you were at LACC.
I was, but I didn't deal with them there. It's inside info. I'm not going to divulge my sources here.
But you have sources.
He's been a bit at times in his career a victim mentality, and he has always been confident, but I think he perceived that things should have come to him better, easier, in a different way. And again, he's had some things in his life. I really believe that the therapy that he's gotten has really kicked him out of that. But there still is, an off the course, sometimes a vulnerability to him, but it seems now to click in on the golf course that he's extremely uber confident and an alpha male mentality.
Right.
And that's really good to see, because in the past, I think with a bad break, he would take it as, oh, it's just me. This always happens to me. So it's good to see.
None of us have ever played with a guy like that on the weekends,
right?
Why, God, how are you punishing me thus?
Right. But, I mean, it's really good to see that he's worked on it.
Outrageous talent. What is his superpower, Mr. Ronis?
I think it's driving the ball, and I think it's driving the ball in both directions. I think he's good at that, and I think he's so confident in his driving that I think if anyone who is confident in their driving can dominate a tournament.
Yeah, okay. So good players, great finish, and that brings us to topic number two, hole number two, Welcome to Live Island. A private meeting with His Excellency, as you see here, Yasir Al-Rumayyan, with Greg Norman and his monster Frankenstein baby of a golf league, the LIV Tour. And they met with a number of prominent PGA Tour stars, including Tiger Woods, reportedly on Monday. Now, I've not heard any reports of this. I'm going to start with you, John Gould. What have you heard about the meeting down there in the Bahamas, where rooms at Baker's Bay went for $3,000 a night, they flew private jets, and they closed the golf course so Tiger and Al-Rumayyan could play a friendly round and talk global business?
Yeah, nobody's heard, I don't think.
Okay.
We haven't heard any kind of word out of that.
But the meeting happened.
As far as we know.
We don't know who was there.
The jet trackers followed them all to the island.
Whose jet got tracked?
Tiger's.
Tiger for Tiger sure, tracked, Rory
and somebody,
for sure.
The PGA Tour jet.
I
don't think it was Rory. The PGA Tour jet picked up somebody in Charlotte, which they believe is Webb Simpson, and went to the Bahamas, right? So this is all through this tracker software that now people can
Stalked. They love tracking planes.
Right,
yeah,
so which is, you know, crazy. But what's interesting to me, we'll find out what happened, right? But the PGA Tour could not have had a better week leading into this negotiation, if you really think about it.
Was
a
negotiation?
Who knows? We'll find out.
Could it have been a capitulation? I think if you're Yasir Al-Rumayyan, you're smiling from ear to ear. You're getting these guys to come closer and closer. Half of the tour players are ready to just end this and say, come on, bring them back. You know, fine Rahm and Koepka, $100,000, let's be done with it. And then there are the never more guys that you made your bed, now lie in your bed of millions, which includes what? Spieth. It includes Ricky.
Justin
it includes
Thomas.
Scheffler, Thomas. That's the Rumayyan and Norman are ready to split this tour leadership in two, like the Titanic. They got them. They got them off kilter. That's the way I read it. You looking at me with a stink eye, Ronis?
No. In what? Explain that one to me again. Who wants to split? Why do they want to split? Who Rumayyan wants
Webb
to
Webb Simpson
split with?
wants to reunify. Rory wants to reunify.
Okay. Okay.
A number of other guys are like, look, we need their money. When Spieth spoke up and said, I don't think we need the Saudi money, Rory went out of his way to go, hey, shh.
Rory said something. I told John this earlier. Rory said something that I think is the running board of what the PGA Tour should go with. Rory paused for about 10 seconds when asked a question, and he said, I really think that the PIF has been provided a disservice by the LIV Tour.
Right.
And Norman Piff, and his cronies.
Piff, not as evil as people think. LIV clown show.
Correct. So it's a bad – Piff is a business. It's a venture capitalist,
yeah,
right?
Right.
So Piff invested in a cruddy product that got railroaded by its CEO into pure garbage.
Right.
And it's a bad investment now. But unfortunately, the way they went about it, they pulled from, let's just say, a non-compete situation from the PGA Tour. And they have to serve out their non-compete, as far as I'm concerned. We talked about it last week with the years or whatever it may
right.
be. Or payback, for that matter. The payback would go back into
That's an
the
interesting
tour.
Way of looking at it. So you buy that theory that the PIF is just a bunch of money the Saudis want to invest, and they are investing
yeah.
in all kinds of sports. Premier League teams, tennis, you name it.
Yep.
But the LIV is such a slapdash clown show by Norman, it doesn't serve them well.
Yeah, because they didn't know the model of the PGA Tour. It's a different model than
Who's
team
they?
Sports.
Piff.
They didn't. So the LIV, Norman just put together a money grab to try to get the talent. He tried to get the top lions and the top giraffes and the top elephants, and he just gave them a bunch of money. But the Tour model is you play for pay. And unlike other sports where you get a salary of $200 million in premier sports or whatever it may be, in golf we've never had that. So all of a sudden they took that model, they applied it to golf, and it did not work.
So a lot of money with a guy who sweet-talked the people with the money into putting something slapdash together. CJ, sounds a lot like a radio situation. You and I have gone through in the day with Triple X Radio. That's what happened to us at 980.
Yeah, I mean, there, yes and no to we haven't had this situation before because they have allowed appearance fees on European Tour events in the past before. We've seen
– and silly season events.
We've seen Phil. We've seen Tiger get paid $2 million just to show up and not even make the cut at some of these events. It's gotten way out of hand now in terms of there's too many players that aren't there. The ratings are taking a hit, and it's only going to get worse. Some of these smaller events, not the non-elevated events, are – you know,
they're suffering.
They're suffering big time. They're going to have to figure out a way to create – whether it's 10 to 12 global type events, in that the tour type events are going to take, they're going to take a hit. They're going to have to start playing all over the world, and they're going to have to bring these players back in. There's no other choice.
Yeah, I mean, there is a value in playing all over the world, no question about it. However, there's got to be a time and a place for it and a logic to it, and it's got to feel like a real golf tournament.
Well,
not
it's got to fit
jingle.
The TV schedule.
Yeah,
you know, if you're going to be on at midnight or 4 a.m. like some of the European Tour events are, you're just not going to get. It's all about money, right? Whether it's PIF money or TV money over here, it's got to be at the times the U.S. market, which is the biggest golf market, but the biggest market, those people want to watch TV. If you're going to have one in Saudi Arabia and it's on at 3 a.m. in the morning, nobody's going to watch, and then they're not going to get TV ratings and the sponsorship money.
Faxon said it has come down to the LIV Tour being now obviously a money grab.
Well,
LIV Tour.
It's a money grab.
There's no like
– it's a money grab, but their strategy, and it's not necessarily the worst strategy, is they've taken – about 20 very premium golf hostages, and they're now negotiating on how to give them back to the tour.
Right.
They don't have a business plan. Like, anyone could take hostages. What are you going to do next?
Yeah,
you're just negotiating to give them back for a certain access, schedule, price, whatever.
It's not an improved product. It's not making the game more global. No. It's not doing any of those things that they said. It was obviously just a money grab. So, you know, we just have to keep it at that. And then I would like the PIF money to come in to the sport. But I need the LIV to go away. Bankrupt it. I don't know what you do. But
why? Why are you so hard on it going away?
Because it's a garbage product,
okay,
and it's associated with golf.
Right.
So I'd like to see it go away. And if you want to take some of the good stuff that you perceive out of the LIV and bring it, but the PGA Tour needs to be unified. And, yeah, get the players and everything eventually back. But the LIV product has to go away. You can, again, use some of the stuff, but and do it in the silly season.
But I just bought all my Crushers gear.
I know. You're going to have to give it back.
Man.
You have to sell it.
But still, back to my...
I have a great Cleek's quarter zip. What do you want me to do with that? Throw it away?
Burn it.
My original point, though, was this week is what the tour was hoping had been happening all season. Obviously, we had upset winners and rain and weather, and it was just not a great product for the tour until this week. But this week is what the tour was hoping would happen all the time with these elevated events. We had great leaderboard, great finish, no weather delays.
And CJ, I want to hear your points on this. You say that it's suffering, right? The ratings are suffering, but
they were going to suffer anyway.
The
minus
measurement
Tiger.
Of ratings, I'm not sure if they've caught up, because I will walk into a room and there'll be a 25-year-old. They'll go, "Did you see, you know, Scheffler such and such? And did you see this? And did you see that?" And I know they're not sitting there in their underwear watching it on TV.
It's anecdotal. Every sport suffers from the same inadequacies or imperfections of the rating system.
Yeah,
okay. Except for the NFL.
Well, the NFL actually gets ratings the best.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's not suffering because of ratings from because of LIV, because the competition with LIV. I mean, that LIV's got zero in the ratings. Nobody's watching on the CW. It's suffering in the sense that we've seen a lot of, for lack of a better word, no names win golf tournaments so far, and not only win golf tournaments this season, but just compete. Who's up there when you turn on
that
Sunday?
That front page of the leaderboard is so important to the casual fan.
Absolutely.
Click, turn it on. What? Who are these guys? Goodbye.
Yeah, and we. Okay. I mean, people sitting on this panel know that those guys that are winning or on the leaderboard on Sunday are awesome players. But the casual fans, they have no idea, but they're like, well, where's John Rahm?
Where's
Brooks Koepka?
The tour has suffered perceptively most of all. It was always going to suffer ratings-wise because Tiger's not a guy anymore. But perceptively, you know in the back of your mind there's about six or seven guys you'd love to see at this big event that you know are not there.
Yeah, yep. Okay. Golf is one of those sports where we like, fans like winners week after week. We like front runners in that. We don't. It's not really an upset story kind of sport like the March Madness that's going on right now.
We want a Cinderella or two. We don't want all Cinderellas.
Yeah, we like dynasties in golf.
Oh, yes. And dynasties in sports, too.
You like to see them challenge, but ultimately you want the guy to win.
Right, but especially in golf, we want to see the heavyweights at the top the time, not the Cinderella stories like there.
Yeah, okay. Well, to be continued for sure. You know, I tried to say, and I don't think they listened to me, is that there was a Ramada Inn and Conference Center in Ponte Vedra. They could have gotten that way cheaper than flying private jets. But I don't know.
Maybe Piff is reimbursing
free breakfast, too, by the way.
Bahamas is nice.
Hooters could have catered it.
Plenty of possibilities.
Plenty of those in Jacksonville.
Piff wrote a check for the whole bill. I'd be surprised.
Probably did.
All right, coming up, we got more here on the Capital Golf Gang. We're plausibly live this week inside the beautiful, brand-new Callaway Fitting Studio here with the Odyssey Putting Studio right built into it at Golfdom in Tyson's Corner. Come on by, get fitted, get the clubs for the new season, and we will see you down here. Stay with us, second half of this week's Capital Golf Gang, straight ahead. Hey, thanks for listening. You know, I want to take a minute to thank Buddy Christensen of Golfdom and his new parent company, Worldwide Golf, for being the exclusive presenting sponsor of the Capital Golf Gang. You know, my connection to Buddy and Golfdom runs deep. As the original form of this store was called the Washington Golf Center, and it was located in a nondescript loading dock behind a tire center in Tyson's. It's where I remember buying my first ever TaylorMade bubble burner. True love. Since then, Buddy worked there as an employee and eventually bought and sold the store, but the legacy of Golfdom, now in its new location, lives on. It is a store filled with happy, helpful employees who both know the game inside and out and love it beyond all reason. And they have every single thing under the sun to help you enjoy it even more. So, if you love golf, and I know you do because you're listening right now, please take a moment to visit any of the Golfdom stores in the D.C. area, from Tyson's to Rockville and now Annapolis. Now, back to the podcast. Oh, how I love the majestic CBS Sports golf theme as we are back on the Capital Golf Gang here at Golfdom. John Ronas, Director of Golf at River Creek, John Gould, the CEO of the Mid-Atlantic PGA, and Chris Johnson from the Salute Military Golf Association. More on junior golf with Mr. Gould, and I know CJ is going to tell us about the SMGA and the events they're doing and stuff you can be part of. Let's move ahead to the next hole this week. Hole number three, Max Stupidity. I assume by now you have seen the insane near fatality on a Max Homa punch out at the Players that went whistling right over a fan's head with his cell phone video rolling and smacked a tree at about Mach 4.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. And I'm just wondering, whatever happened to, you know, the marshals that used to say, hey, keep backing up. That was a near miss of tragic proportions.
People don't listen.
That's exactly what I was going
to
say.
People do not listen to anyone anymore.
They used to have ropes. They used to have physical ropes.
This is far outside the ropes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, pick up the ropes and move them further. Get more marshals.
People are idiots, Zabe.
Okay.
I mean, there was barely any space.
Look at the picture. Every single person in there has got their phone out.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And the one guy nearly got the asset of a lifetime, meaning the last of his lifetime.
Right.
Yep. And the freeze frame, did you see the freeze frame of the ball like they did with Tiger, at the Masters a little bit
a couple years ago?
Crazy stuff.
Did you see the setup? Like, did you see them from behind, though? There was no room.
Yeah.
There was literally no room to hit
the screen.
Shot.
I've got it right. Can you lean out in front of the jumbotron?
Yeah, what are we doing?
Yeah, he's hitting right over their heads because he's aiming for the goalpost there.
Right.
And it's off pine straw, right. As we all know. That pine straw ball can go anywhere.
Yep. It's
you can go anywhere. You have no idea where it's coming off a pine straw.
It's just people want to be so close to the action, and they've all got their phones. They're all trying to record their video for, you know, whether it's a viral moment or just their Facebook page or whatever.
It is
way past the pale. And I don't think it's the marshal's fault. I really don't.
No, because he probably pushed him back, and as he was standing over it, I'll guarantee it was two more feet forward, and then all of a sudden, like, they're around one of the goalposts. Like, it's ludicrous.
Homa's the greatest guy. We all love him. But he had to be more aggressive. He had to say, listen, I'm not hitting until you guys keep moving back. There is no telling where this goes. I'm right now going to hit right over your heads. And there's no guarantee. I'm a pro, but I'm not God.
Right.
I can't guarantee anything.
How about last week at Bay Hill with Justin Thomas took the cut the corner?
Didn't see it.
And he off the tee. And so he literally hit it right over the gallery standing on the tee box
with
a driver.
Oh,
like he just hit one of those where, like, I'm going to hit it into the other fairway and cut the corner like that way. And, yeah, I mean, the shot, the still of that, him
aiming.
I got to look that one up.
Yeah.
Wow.
The thing that I also saw this week was, one, you know, in England or Scotland or whatever, where they have when they have opening day, they have the captain play-in.
Yeah, saw that.
Right, so they
saw
have
that one.
Yeah, so they had an amateur, you know, he's the captain, but he's with 10 handicap or whatever, and they line up like it's a tour.
Ceremonial
first shot of the season.
By the way, it's like 50 degrees. Everyone wears jackets and pants. He's got shorts on
this
like
guy's
a maniac.
Got shorts on, and he just drills one.
But he looked like a strong, athletic guy. I'm like, all right, he's going to do fine.
Right.
No, he did not do fine.
And so it still kills me to this day to look at this picture now with Max Homa that we're so trusting of these guys because we know they're so good.
Who's we?
We're trusting of those people. But we're trusting of anyone. There's a great YouTube of this lady, and she hits one basically off the heel of the club, bounces, and hits someone immediately in the gallery. She's not a pro.
Right.
And then she tees up another one and does the same exact thing.
And nobody moves.
No, you hear someone in the crowd go, make her stop. It's fantastic.
Well, if you go to YouTube, there is like golf fans being hit by shots compilation, they're like an hour long.
Yep. Oh, of course. And they just – I don't get it. Like,
have
you're
you ever,
dead.
CJ.
I know you've played in tour pro-ams before. I mean, I've
had – At the Hootie, the Monday after the Masters.
Yeah, well, that one has – that one's in a couple weeks. That one has
– I played in that where there was crowds.
That one has –
And I topped one off a 10 down there.
Yeah, that has a big gallery. But a normal PGA Wednesday pro-am, people are so stupid in the galleries there. Yeah. They line the tee – they line the ropes even, and they've got – dummies like me playing in the middle there. I mean, it's like, it freaks out the amateurs even more because they've never had that before.
Right,
and they know they can hit a shot that can literally murder somebody on the spot.
Yeah. Well, anyway, thank God it didn't turn out worse. Yeah. But, yeah, please, people, back up. Hole number 4, scorecard scoregami. I need you fellas to take a look at this scorecard right here and tell me what you think. This was how my boy Hatch, who has been on this show before, Bryant Hatcher, keeps score. We were playing at Lansdowne on Sunday. He writes in a horizontal line for a par, and if you're over par, the number you are over par, a 1 or a 2 or a 3 or whatever. And I guess if you make a birdie, we didn't make any birdies, he does a minus.
Right.
He says, oh, yeah, Zabe, this is the easiest way to do it, man. What do you think of this way to score your scorecard?
What's great picture, Hatch. What's the difference between a par and a birdie if it's just a slash?
It would be minus one, I guess.
Minus one. So
some people do the math that way. So, you know, I see a lot of scorecards, right? And obviously for our tournaments, our official events, it's got to be the actual number. But many pros will do it by fours, right? So they'll just look, and they're doing what he's done on the card, but in their head. And saying, okay, I'm looking at fours. If that's a 5, it's a +1. If that's a 3, it's a -1. And I, at the end of the, you know, 9, I'm at -2, so that's a 34 because it's 2 under having fours on every hole. That's the only problem with that is that's dangerous is that, you know, you don't have an actual number to to reflect on.
Well, you do.
But he knows what it is, yeah. If it's right, you know.
It's interesting.
When, potato, potato.
Siege. You
know? When I'm walking, I rarely write down the scorecard. I mean, I just don't. And I always do it in my head like that, though. Like, not like that. I go, if I made a bogey of one, I go plus one. If I make par on two, I go plus one.
Right. Yep.
Number three, you know.
Running tally.
Yeah, I just keep it in my head like that. Or when I go back after nine, I go, you know, I just think of it like that. But I don't think of it as, like, I had a four, I had a five.
A lot of people use a lot more notations than that, though. Right. They're keeping track of.
If there's a ton of different bets, obviously, or if they're keeping greens and fairways and putts. I tend to, what I do, which makes people mock me, but I don't care, is I circle pars and I diamond birdies. Oh, that's weird. Right, exactly. Thank you. Welcome to the I do it because I'm an amateur. A par is good. I want to see those circles. It's reinforcing to me. And the diamond is even better. And so I don't want to see a scorecard with one circle, one birdie. I want to see a bunch of circles.
That's very good.
And it visually, it lets me see my round easily because anything not circled is bad. And so then you figure out your bad
holes. And what's an eagle?
Never had one.
Yeah, exactly. That's not a problem.
Probably a pentagram, a pentagram maybe, or a hexagon.
I think that, you know what, in a sports psychology sense, that's fantastic. Because when you look at the card.
Everyone does it different,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's good.
And there are some people that are real strict about how neat the card is. That if you are keeping the card as the guy on the left side of the card, better be neat. And they also get mad when they go, four holes behind. What'd you have on 11? And you're like, I don't remember.
Yeah.
Four holes ago.
I don't like driving the cart or keeping score, so I'm not going to complain.
The other
about
thing
anything.
That's an issue with the circles, too, is that depending on how you remember it, people do their score that way. So we had our opening kind of scramble early in March with our pros, and we had a scoring issue because someone circled a score.
Oh, boy.
But wrote down a par, right? Yep. So it was a par three. They put three, but circled. They actually had birdied it, but put three and circled it. So when they went back to check their card, they counted the circles and say, yeah, we made 12 birdies, we were 12 under. But when you add up the card, they were 10 under because twice they circled a par and totally screwed themselves. So they end up having to sign for the 10 under.
Yeah, no, not a DQ, score, but they just get the higher score.
Yep.
Okay, hole number five, sticker shock. Would you pay $700+ to play TPC Sawgrass, because that's pretty much the rate. It's $650 starting at, said the website as I checked this morning, starting at $650 peak season, goes down to a mere $450 once you get past May. And then if you want to walk, a caddy is another $85 on top of that.
My answer is it's my favorite place in the world. I actually know everything about the membership and everything at Sawgrass because that's one of my top spots to retire is in TPC Sawgrass in the neighborhood. Right. But I wouldn't pay $750 for anywhere.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, it's a
it would be the first that I would pay.
It's steep.
It's ridiculous.
But in the grand scheme of things, with a lot of these high-end public access courses being there, is it justifiable? I kind of think it's justifiable. Hey. Whistling Straits is up there at that number. Aaron Hills is pushing the same thing.
Hey, it's a market issue, right?
Yeah,
if people are paying it and they're filling their golf course, it's appropriately priced. It's not what I would pay. But, you know, Ronis and I are a little bit, outside the normal because we're used to playing for free. So it's not we usually pay $100 and now it's a $400 or $500. We don't pay.
Right.
Right. So it's really hard for us to say, it's worth $750. I'm not paying $750 for anything.
See, did you get into your wallet for that?
I thought on TV it looked as pure as I've ever seen that place. It looked unbelievable. But I just can't justify that. The worst part of it is if you go out and you pay that and then you dunk four balls in the water on 17, you shoot 95 or worse or whatever.
You're not feeling good.
And you feel awful walking over there and you're down a grand because you've bought a shirt, you've had a cheeseburger and some beers, and,
explain that one to your wife.
Yeah,
right?
It's a grand, it's $1,000 of a day easily. And, it's just hard to justify. I mean, I get the demand and everything, but I think that that's bad for the sport when.
Really?
Well, I think, because, you know, somebody who loves golf, who may even be a good player, who just can't afford to play it and never has the opportunity to play it. I mean, unless you
but if you suppress the price artificially, let's say by half, let's go to 300, guys would gobble up the times and then resell them. There'd be a secondary market, like the ticket market.
Well, unless even if they couldn't do that, you would never be able to get a time. you'd never be able to get on because
and the condition would be what it is and right. all the other stuff.
We're going to talk about it later
well,
in the show
I think
in terms
the
of
the, still
the state of the industry.
They can't condition the course at $300 a pop?
Well, it's just that if you're going to have tee times from 5 a.m.
Rodas, he's like, we need all the budget.
Yeah.
Micro tines, aeration.
I mean, the practice facility is unbelievable there. It's just – and, again, you can join the DIE course. There's an initiation fee, and then you get – better rates on the stadium course if you want to play. You get to use all the amenities, clubhouse, practice range, all the other stuff. So there's options to do it, but it's just – it is
Siege,
outrageous.
Siege, you've been there quite a few times, right?
No.
I thought you have with the SMGA. You've been to Jacksonville, right?
Yeah, no, I've been to the Players' Championship as a fan, but I've
haven't
played it.
Okay.
No, I've never played it.
Yeah. What's really cool is that in the clubhouse, as you know, Ronis, they've got a lot of the original documents of the project.
Yes.
And the wild, untamed swampland that Pete Dye and, at the time, Tour Commissioner Dean Beaman.
Yep.
decided to turn into this incredible palace. And it was crazy what
Stadium
it looked like.
Stadium golf and all the other stuff. It's
it was
it's awesome.
They paid $1 for the whole piece of dirt. And they got ripped off at $1 because
yeah.
it was alligator snake infested, yeah. trees down everywhere. And yep. man, what they built of it is amazing. And it made perfect sense. They're like, look, we're the tour. We should own a place that's our signature place that we make money on all year long.
Yep.
Duh.
Yep.
Yep.
So there you go. All right. Hole number 6, rules train wrecks. This still shot is from the did the ball hit the line above or yep. below? On the 7th hole for Rory McIlroy with Hovland and Spieth alongside. Look, I don't know if you could ascertain for certain. The camera angles were inconclusive. You had Johnson Wagner throwing balls into the bank on live from
that. Throwing out his shoulder.
So stupid.
Right. But I get crazy thinking that it was an 8-minute and change exchange. I watched all of it and said, I want my 8 minutes back of my life. What a waste of time. And I thought, who's behind him? Who's behind him getting train wrecked here waiting to hit?
Hit a warning shot.
Yes. How is this reasonable?
Yeah.
Cool. I look at you, the rules director.
Yeah.
Can we not get rulings in a timely manner?
We should. You know, this would never happen at our level, you know, at the section level.
No.
We're going to decide whether it hit above or not, and then we're moving on. You know, the problem with televised golf, and we've talked about this a few times on the show, is they're counting – you know, they have 6 rules officials covering this whole course. Maybe it's 8, but they have, you know, they're
that's
not.
It's a lot.
Yeah, well, it's a lot. It's a tour event, but they don't have everybody standing on the line.
On every shot, every year.
On every shot for every person and saying, okay, this went to the left of me, so it hit inbounds or hit on course. And
are you allowed to use video to back your point as to, wait, look, I do deserve a drop here? Is
yes.
that legal?
Yes.
So it's sort of like replay in golf.
It's a question of fact.
Right.
Where did the ball cross?
Right.
Now, the hard part about golf is this ball was 100 feet in the air crossing a line on the ground, you know, that curves. So, you know, where it actually crossed, we're really trying to do
1-inch red line on grass.
Right.
Good luck on that
right.
one.
So, we're doing our best and what we would say is, you know, with virtual certainty, do you know where the number is?
Virtual
like
certainty.
95%. Are we 95% sure where it hit?
Why didn't they draw that line closer to the damn water?
Well,
it was halfway up the bank.
Right.
I didn't get that.
And I would argue that you put it up all the way up the bank.
Alligator.
Now, because, well.
is that the alligator demarcation line?
Because you can play and take practice swings and do everything from a penalty area now, there's no reason to not have it higher. So if it does go in and you do have the penalty, when you take the 2 club lengths, you're actually on flat ground instead of still on the slope.
Here's another question, dumb question. Why even have a line?
Well, we got to be able to drop somewhere. You got to be able to take your 2 club lengths from something. Right?
The edge of the water.
You can't just put it in the fairway. The edge of the water, no, that won't work. You get,
why not?
It would have there because it was so clean looking.
Do you know where the water is?
Yeah, most edges of water
are
not clean.
It is super clean there, but the issue is if you've got the penalty already, you shouldn't have to hit with the ball above your head on the side slope because that's where 2 club lengths ended to you.
Right.
You should be able to get to a spot that you've already taken the penalty. Let's get you back in play.
Look, Siege, weigh in on this.
The best was on that one was Hovland saying it crossed by the turtles.
Yeah. No, that was the one on 18. If this
oh,
on
that was
Saturday,
the one.
But there was there was a turtle argument from Hovland
on 18.
I mean, it's not going to go away on TV either. Because as technical as it gets, and probably most of the people watching don't even know what they're watching on there, like what the rules are there.
Right.
So maybe it's somewhat educational, and those golf fan Karens at home love to call in or get on social media and be like, oh, Wyndham Clark trampled all over his, you know, his lie or whatever,
way,
like and all of that. It's not going to go away, though, because it's got some form of controversy to it, some form of drama, and the tour and TV on the tour needs all of it. Like what happened last year at the Players when Daniel Berger and Joel Damon and Victor Hovland got in an argument over where Berger's ball crossed on Sunday when nobody was in contention, but they were arguing, well, it counts towards the FedEx Cup points and the placement and all this kind of stuff. And people ate it up. It was like one of the biggest social media posts of the year because there was like three golfers yelling at each other.
Well, you may lose FedEx Cup points, but you're going to gain PIP points. Yeah. So it's going to all come out in the wash.
Right.
I just say move it along because 8 minutes
it
is too
should
long.
Take, they should have rules official get in there earlier and just said, you know, it either crossed or it didn't.
Yeah.
You know, and they,
it's
all this,
Rory, what'd you see? You were watching the ball the whole time.
Right.
What'd you see?
Well, and then Jordan says, these guys over here think they saw, and it just
you know what?
Jordan was not helpful.
No.
No.
But then Rory saying, I figured we'd split the difference. That also is not good.
No.
Because the rules are the rules. You're not splitting any difference like it's a compromise.
Yeah.
You're not buying a car here.
Yes. Yeah. You either went in there or went back there.
Here's where it went. Anyone have any problem with that? No. Any video? No. Done.
I say drop near the nearest turtle. That's probably
right. That drop area was terrible, though.
Yes, okay.
Because you're now like.
All right. Hole number seven. Are you influenced? My goodness, the rise of golf influencers on YouTube, TikTok, and others is quite spectacular. And there was a Myrtle Beach qualifier for this new PGA Tour Myrtle Beach tour stop coming up this summer.
Yeah.
Explain this to me. You guys know about this, CJ.
Yes.
This is your topic.
Well, so they as you said, they're golf influencers, golf podcasts. In some
no way, laying up, bar stool,
Capital Golf Game.
Good.
Foreplay is that,
Foreplay, good is another big one.
Bob Does Sports is the one Fat Perez is involved in.
Right.
He's like had a, and he's from Richmond, Virginia.
Is he?
Actually, yeah.
300-pound guy, mullet. But a good player.
Yeah, actually played in one of our events. We had our pro scratch last year.
That's so funny.
We did it kind of the same way that they're doing it. We said, hey, you know, we'd love to get you to play.
So this is a qualifier for 14 hand-selected, zero handicap or better influencers to get into the PGA Tour event that's going to be at Myrtle Beach.
Is it to get in the event or to get in the money qualifier? Do you know?
I think it's in the event.
Oh, okay.
I thought it was to get in the event. One spot.
One spot. For a small handful of guys. Most of these influencers stink, you know, but they're living the life and we're all jealous.
At that level, I mean, there's some of them that played college golf.
That's true.
On there. The one guy.
Grant Horvat.
Yeah, that's who I was going to say.
He's good.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, like, this is good for growing the game of golf, all of these influencers and these podcasts. It's a shot by the PGA Tour, and I think it really says what's going on with the PGA Tour right now, that they need to bring these guys in, essentially a bunch of high handicappers. I know these guys aren't high handicappers, but they're
compared
associated.
To the tour players, they are.
But these guys are associated with podcasts or whatever it is, where you're basically a lot of people are watching these shows on YouTube and watching guys go out and shoot 95 because they're drinking beer. They're acting like idiots on the golf course.
Dude bro golf.
Bro golf. And that, in some ways, is becoming more popular to watch that. Spend your time doing that than to watch golf on Thursday afternoon.
I'm going
to
be very interested into how the 125th guy on the money list likes this when he said that person's getting in instead of me.
Yeah.
But I'm also a co-owner of the tour now because of this whole thing. It's going to be very interesting, their reaction, because – it might be good for the PGA Tour revenue, but it ain't good for the PGA Tour player because they always hate when Tony Romo plays because he took a spot from me or from one of our guys strictly for the PR.
I say hold a qualifier to let that guy be a marker so he gets to play during the rounds, but he's a marker. Don't compete. I think it's great. I think influencers and all these channels, even the Dude Bro Golf, which can be a bit much, don't tell Ronas, but I think it's great for the game. He probably hates it, though, as a serious guy. Hi,
I don't hate it. I just have no interest. I never watch any of them.
Yeah, it's hate oozing.
Like, you can call me a hater, but I have no interest. I never stop, and I watch a million stupid videos on golden retrievers and all kinds of stuff.
I never stop on the
Golf ones.
The thing is, though, a lot of tour guys have bought into
these shows
and these
They're
influencers.
Appearing on the
great for their reach and their popularity and everything. So it's not bad. I'm just jealous we're not, you know, doing this. Although, who knows how much money, if anything, they're making. They may be playing golf for a box of Top Flights.
Well, this guy, Fat Perez from Richmond, he was a CPA, he was an accountant, and he got involved during COVID when, you know, we're on lockdown, and he got involved with these breezy golf guys, and they were just doing Zoom type shows, and it got so big that he quit his job.
That's good. Well, good for them. Okay, hole number 8, going rogue on rollback. PGA Tour said they will not support the proposed golf rollback. Your thoughts?
Great.
Yeah, I mean, the PGA of America has already said the same thing. I don't know if that will influence the USGA at all. But
the PGA of America and the Tour are like, yeah, nah. That's a massive split. Two heavyweight organizations opposite two heavyweight organizations, R&A and the USGA.
Yeah. Well, I think it's great because it's ludicrous. And you could say, we're going to stop going forward at this point. But I'm telling you, I have this absolute conspiracy thing.
Oh, they won't quit. They'll be mission creep. They'll say, well, this rollback didn't do much. It only took 3 yards off of the top players.
No, man, just stop now. Don't roll anything back. Just stop it right now. Put all your parameters in place of where the golf balls are now. And then don't roll anything back. Because my conspiracy theory is they're now going to limit the big, big players, and they're mostly United States players in golf balls, that they're rebooting the whole golf ball market. There is no golf balls that are legal after 2028.
Oh, that's why I'm going to hold on to these.
That's right.
So now
you get the big three that are going to make golf balls, and now they have every golf ball now going forward.
Who are the big three?
Titleist,
Callaway,
Bridgestone. Or Callaway, TaylorMade, and Titleist. Those are the kind of the big three.
Bridgestone not in there?
They're in there.
They are in there.
Kirkland not in there? No, but that's – and so now all of a sudden
– Molitor not in there?
Who's going to put all the investment in there? And then there's obviously the counterfeit market. So it's very interesting. That's just my conspiracy theory on it. But
we're not done
leave it
this.
Where it is.
You know, I've said all along that what I think is the ultimate end goal for the USGA, what they started with is having a bifurcated system where the tour has a different rules and a different ball, and everybody else can play whatever they need to because we're all amateurs and we need all the luck we can.
Right.
They didn't agree to that. So I think this is the firing, you know, the shot across the bow. Okay, we're rolling everything back.
Good. It should never happen.
All right. Hole number 9, gone private. Now, I hope you were going to say something before we went live, Ghoul, that I hope I've not made a mistake on this, but I saw this story about how a public course in Florida has decided, yeah, we're going to actually close shop on this and make this a private club. Arnold Palmer designed Heritage Club. I'm trying to find the city here. It's in Lakewood Ranch, Lakewood Ranch Golf and Country Club, and the Heritage Golf Group has purchased it. It's 4 courses, Virginia-based company, it's in Sarasota, Florida.
I played it last year. I played at Lakewood Ranch.
And
about this time last year.
How unusual, Ghoul, is it for a public to go private?
Actually, it's not uncommon recently. There's been some others that have done it, and it's mainly because of the state of the game as it is right now. Right, that, you know, your course is probably busier than it's ever been, more rounds than it's ever been, probably more members than you've had in a while. Because, you know, hey, COVID was terrible and a lot of bad things came out of it. But one good thing came out of it is that people realized outdoor exercise and entertainment is never going to be a problem. Right. So golf became big. And everybody probably who listens to this is, familiar with that. So because of that, you know, some of our facilities have said, hey, we can make more money going private, get the initiation, and doing it this way rather than, you know, charging a fee every time you play as a daily fee.
We had 1757 here went private.
Yep.
They did?
Spring Creek.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. I hope that place has me banned for life because that place is a dump.
Okay. Fair enough.
I'm sorry. I'm allowed to say that? I mean,
say
look, nice people, probably great management. The course itself, it's a dog's vomit of a layout. I'm sorry. You can have it, though. Good for them, though.
I don't work there, so I'm fine with whatever you say.
Hey, Spring Creek.
Don't say it about
Spring
River Creek.
Went private. You know, you played there.
Oh, did it really?
Yeah.
I did, too.
They were semi, weren't they?
Yeah, they were semi. They had members, yeah, but they went totally private.
They were in the category of snooty public.
Yeah.
So they're one click away from
just,
private.
It's really a reflection of the market right now. You know, one of the things, I'm having a education seminar later this week and talking with some pros about how are they handling that your tee sheet is always full. You know, how much staff do you need? Because it used to be at 2 o'clock on Saturday, you could go home. Well, they're playing till 6:30, right?
Hey, Ronis, what do you think for staff? Two guys?
Yeah, two.
Guy in the cart barn hosing out the carts.
Just one with a hose.
Yeah,
it's ridiculous. It's beyond. Yeah, yeah. So, the expectations are beyond
the expectations for the pros. You know, you're getting texts, emails at 8 o'clock at night about, you know, hey, I got to get in there to get my clubs out. You know, all this stuff that is a good problem because we have so much play and so many members.
Right.
But it's also wearing.
All right.
You know, it's the negative side of that is what it's, how it's wearing on the price.
I've always wanted to take Westfield's private. Out there in Clifton.
Yep.
Jason Paul does a great job of running it. It's such a great course. It's a great layout. Fred Couples design, beautiful. But I don't know if they're ever going to do that.
Is
there a public course in the D.C. area you'd love to, if you won the lottery, take it private and say, get out, riffraff?
Well, you know, out in my area, Raspberry is on a beautiful piece of property.
You could do a lot with a Raspberry.
Yeah, but you know what you do? You take away an amenity from the community. When you make one of those public courses
that
private.
That is true.
Yep. It's an asset to the community.
I know, and they're already closing public courses.
And
every time I drive by with that course on 7, the Humboldt West Park?
Yeah, it's closed.
West Park closed.
Right.
I drive by the old Goose Creek, and I see homes, and my heart kind of hurts.
Yeah.
You know what's coming back? Spurrier's old course is
Beacon
coming
Hill.
Back.
Yeah, we Beacon talked Hill. About that on the show earlier.
Yeah. We need to do a show from out there.
Yeah, it's getting close.
But it's coming back as private again.
Yes, it is.
The one that I always thought would be good, and I know that they rumored about it with Kemper, is Whiskey Creek. I always thought would be a good private club.
If they
would have to build a new clubhouse there, but that's a good,
good
facility there.
Yeah.
Okay. But a new daily fee, you know, is probably the way to go because you can charge. You can just charge more these days.
But it's managing expectations. They can build daily fees that you don't have to pay $125 for.
Right.
Good luck on that. Yeah. All right, I got a couple minutes left. Let's start with you, Ghoul. Remind people where if they've got a junior that wants to play competitively this summer, where do they go? How do they sign up?
Yeah, thank you. So, this is the time of year where we get sign-ups for our junior tour and junior golf events. MAPGA.com, and they click on the junior golf button, the tab, and you're going to find a full schedule. We have 18 36-hole events now, so if your kid is looking to play in college or just wants to kind of improve their game at a higher level, we've got a lot of two-day events now, certainly all of our one-day events that we've had for many years. You can join the tour and then pick your schedule from there. We're all over the DMV. It's just a great chance to get the kids who might play at their club and do okay at their club. Well, try playing a different course that you've never played before with people you don't know. That's going to be as Ronis will say, that's a great way to develop your
game. I've said it 100 times. It's the best junior tour in the country.
Nice.
I grew up on one. It's the best. Great people.
Do they still have the Bubby Worsham?
No, that's the Middle Atlantic Golf Association.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
But we've taken over the Bobby Gorin.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
And it's now a pro junior at Woodmont, which is –
I played in it last year.
Yeah, and Buddy sponsors it from Golf Dump. So it's a really cool event.
Right.
All right. Yeah. What about the Bobby Bowers?
Bobby Bowers is still in existence. The match play at Springfield.
Why do I remember these names?
Yeah.
I have to write my kids' birthdays and my anniversary down on paper.
The Bobby Bowers.
Yeah.
Springfield.
So I know because I have kids who have won every one of those tournaments that I've taught. And it's always good to look them up and see how old I am.
All right. Good stuff. CJ, what's up with the Salute Military Golf Association?
Everything's great. We're about to kick off our spring clinic series around the country as the weather gets better here. SMGA, for those who don't know, rehabilitates post 9/11 wounded and injured veterans using the great game of golf as therapy for them. And we're based headquartered here in the DC area, but a national organization in helping veterans in all 50 states. And we're here locally in this area. We do our clinics, golf clinics, every Saturday morning at the Olney Golf Park. Great golf facility.
Glad that place is still up and running.
Yeah, absolutely. You don't see many of those type of facilities. And our signature fundraising event locally in this area is at Manor Country Club in Rockville on Monday, June 3rd. It's our 18th annual SMGA Charity Golf Classic, and you can get more info on any of our social media or at smga.org.
All right, very good.
Thank you.
It's aeration season, boys.
It stinks.
Yeah.
It does, but it's necessary, though.
Yep. Yeah.
So when you're playing around like I did and there's pretty bad aeration in sand, how do you account for that with your handicap?
No two-putt. Oh, you can't.
You have to record it as is?
Yeah, unfortunately.
People but call you a sandbagger.
That's a good thing. With the new handicap system, if all the scores are up, it's kind of calibrated because of the day. Like, it'd be really windy or something like that. So,
all right. Exit question. What's the range on a gimme on an aerated green?
I'd say about 1 to 2 inches.
No. I mean that you give them the putt, you knucklehead.
No, he meant that.
Yeah. I meant that.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm going to extend it from the putter grip to the length of the putter.
All right. Yeah. All right, boys. Great time. Thanks to Golfdom for sponsoring us. We'll see you next week on the Capital Golf Gang. Mm-hmm.